Geekscape.com.
Can the white race survive? Part 7. Ancient America. There has not been more mystery and speculation about any part of the earth or any of its people than there has been about ancient America. Through the pages of all histories dealing with the New World and its swarthy inhabitants, the same question always stands forth. Whence came the Indians? Why were the civilizations of southwestern United States, of Mexico, Central America, and South America built, especially to such magnificent heights in Central America, then allowed to decay, and in the center of its greatest brilliance in Central America, to entirely disappear, except for the ruins, whose remarkable witness is only just now being placed before the world? I can declare here, with absolute confidence in my assertion being proven true in the future, that the old civilization of America, antedating Columbian times, was the work of white people who held a slave class, unmistakably, of Negro features, and greatly in excess of the whites numerically, and that amalgamation with the Negroes obliterated the whites and their civilization. There need be no more mystery as to who the Amerindian is, nor as to the why and wherefore of the lost civilization. It is today written as clearly as any page of ancient history, and the writing will grow clearer to all students the further Dr. Morley and his worthy kind go in unearthing the ruins of Yucatan and adjacent districts. For years, I have searched for evidence that the world could accept, although for 15 years I have been convinced of the essential truth of what I can now give in more positive form than I could have done until recently. First exhibit in our chain of evidence was recorded by Dr. Thomas Gann in 1926 and published in 1927 in his very interesting volume, Ancient Cities and Modern Tribes. Dr. Gann, keen scientific observer that he is, made observations in Yucatan, the importance of which is far and beyond what he even remotely dreamed of, according to my humble opinion. He devoted a few scanty pages to an item, which he admits holds much mystification for him, and which deserves a volume to itself. By 1926, I had gathered various bits of more or less convincing proof from here and there, in both North and South America, to back up my assertions about the lost American civilization, and about the true ethnic makeup of the Amerindian. Enough bits, if all put together, to make a book of themselves, but I still wished for some outstanding evidence of a reliable nature from other and more accepted authority. It was partly due to this insistent desire that this present work was delayed. I believe the evidence was sufficiently conclusive as far as the rest of the world was concerned, but in relation to America, I wished for more direct evidence. Despairing of securing such for the present, I had proceeded to the assembling of my data and had nearly finished my manuscript when Dr. Gann's book appeared. I had already found valuable testimony in Gregory Mason's work, quoted further on, but when I read a review of Dr. Gann's book in the Times Book Review of June 12, 1927, in which the reviewer, Mr. Mason himself, gave eminence to the few pages dealing with the distinct racial differences between the old Maya master class and the conquered and enslaved class, I was thrilled, as only one can be who has searched vainly during years for something of great value and meets with unexpected success after seeming failure. I hastened to telephone my book dealer and asked that a copy of Dr. Gann's book be sent special delivery. The thousands who are reading Dr. Gann's book, of abounding interest from cover to cover, quite likely find but casual interest in the following, beginning on page 236. The Maya were, it is believed, originally descended from a highland people who occupied the elevated plateau between Mexico and Peru, about the second millennium BC. A branch of these, whose descendants were later to found the great Mayan Empire, migrated to the lowlands, somewhere in the neighbourhood of Veracruz, during the first millennium BC. Now it seems not at all improbable that other bands of these archaic highland people had at various times and different points descended to the more fertile lowlands and there formed the nuclei of civilized communities, and it may well be that the Maya, when in their march southwards they reached Honduras and southern Guatemala, found these regions already occupied by the descendants of other branches of the archaic people who had arrived there by a more direct route than themselves. Following the usual correlation of might and right, the Mayans would, no doubt, at once have proceeded to conquer and dispossess these aboriginal possessors of the soil of their territory, and later to enslave them. This would account for the sculptures on the monuments representing Mayan warriors standing upon bound captives, obviously from their features, belonging to an alien and inferior race. More extended study of the Maya, especially of their sculptures in stone, figurines in pottery, skeletal remains from the ancient graves, and modern descendants, cannot fail, I think, to convince one that there were at least two separate and distinct races involved. The one, the ruling race, to which belonged the kings, nobles, and astronomer priests, depicted upon the monuments throughout most of the larger ruined cities of the old empire, and the other the workers or slaves, by far the more numerous, who under the dominion of the ruling class built those gigantic cities throughout this part of Central America, with their palaces and temples, courts, plazas, and sculptured monoliths, whose ruins, now buried in the depths of the primeval forests, are the wonder and admiration of all who have had the privilege of visiting them. The faces of the priests and rulers are quite familiar to us, sculptured on the monoliths of Copan, Quirigua, Naranjo, Tikal, and Yaxchilan, and moulded in stucco at Palenque and other cities. Considerable variation may be noticed amongst them, depending on the skill of the artist, the material from which they had been sculptured, and the period to which they belong. But generally speaking, the type is fairly uniform throughout. The nose is Roman and narrow, the chin and brow somewhat receding, and the lips are very prominent, the lower lip often protruding well beyond the upper. The stelae from Copan show this type of face, and the outline of a head from one of the monuments at Ixtlan exhibits it in profile. The type is found from one end of the old empire to the other, and in the majority of the cities is the only one handed down to posterity, for it must be obvious that no matter how greatly the workers might outnumber the ruling classes, the heads of the former would never occupy a prominent position upon the sculptures. Descendants of the ruling class, both of old and new empire times, are still to be found in considerable numbers among the northern Maya of today, many of whom have pure Maya blood in their veins. The next few paragraphs are devoted by Dr. Gann to drawing parallels between this old master class type and the lighter-skinned, more even-featured coastal sections of the modern Maya Indians, supporting his questionable assertion that there are today Mayan Indians who are true to the type of that ancient master class. I believe that Dr. Gann's desire to find remnants of the old builder race has led him into an error. We know that in the more or less mongrelized race of India, there is a line of demarcation between that portion, generally light-skinned, which has stamped upon it physical features resembling the finer ones of their white Aryan ancestors, and certainly inherited from the latter, and that portion, blacker and more heavily of Negro ancestry, who have such distinct Negro physical features. We find a striking parallel situation among the Mayas, as further quotation from Dr. Gann will reveal. Let us never lose sight of our absolutely unfailing criterion of race, as indicated by the colour of the skin, almost, but not invariably, backed by true nasal indications. Quoting Dr. Gann again, unfortunately, as they were buried without any special precautions with a view to the preservation of the body, the passage of nearly 2,000 years has almost entirely destroyed the skeletons and crania of the old empire, which would have given us an accurate conception of the shape and capacity of the skull and facial contours. The worker or slave class appear to have belonged to an entirely different race from that of the ruling class. Whether they were the aboriginal inhabitants of the country who were conquered by the Maya when they first took possession, or whether they belonged to less civilized tribes living to the south who migrated north into what afterwards became the Maya area and were at a later date conquered by the Maya, it is now impossible to say. The fact, however, that on many of the stelae, bound captives are represented as lying or squatting beneath the feet of the chief persons represented in the sculpture is fairly conclusive evidence to my mind that in most cases the Maya had to conquer and oust the original dwellers before settling down to the erection of their cities of the old empire. Their most prominent facial characteristics were broad, rather flat faces, large mouths with thick lips, somewhat prominent chins, eyes, not infrequently a little oblique, and nose broad, short, and slightly retroussé. Excellent examples of this type are seen in the clay figurine of a woman from Copan in Honduras, found in the vicinity of the ruins, the greenstone mask found in northern Piten, and the two heads of captives, represented as bound with ropes beneath the feet of two rulers, from a stelae at Ixon in the Peten district of Guatemala. Now note carefully the following, in connection with our comparison of the two modern types of Mayas, with two similar types, among less negroid and more negroid Hindus. It simply shows that the complete evening up process to reach a homogeneous mixture has not been attained. The blacker, more negroid section is the less successful in retaining any semblance of the civilization and culture the white portion of their common ancestry bequeathed them. It is a repetition of the same story as found in so many parts of the world, ancient and modern. Immediately following the last quotation we have given, Dr. Gann continues, this type is still very common among the Indians in the neighbourhood of Copan, and in fact among all the highland aborigines living in this region. These Indians are a good deal darker in colour than the northern Maya, less intelligent, and culturally very much lower in the scale. The photograph of a modern Copan Indian girl may be compared with the clay figurine of the girl of 15 centuries ago, and it will be seen that there is a strong resemblance between the two. I was able to pick out at least two other women in whom the likeness to the figurine was so startling that they might have sat for it. Unfortunately, however, these refused point blank to sit for their photographs, having, as ill luck would have it, caught me in the act of surreptitiously comparing their profiles with that of the figurine, and not relishing its implied resemblance to their own. The type seen on the monoliths at Copan is entirely absent from the present Indian population, and it is not improbable that at the time of the great Mayan exodus from this region, about the end of the 6th century, all the ruling class were among the emigrants, and those left behind consisted exclusively of the working class, and probably the dregs of this, as naturally the rulers would have taken the best of the workers with them, which would account for the fact that the artistic and architectural life of the city practically ceased after the exodus. No more buildings were erected, no new sculpture attempted, no time markers put up, and so deprived of its priests and rulers, and of all religious and artistic stimulus, the great city gradually sank to what it is today, a village inhabited by poverty-stricken, uneducated, unambitious Indians, whose chief aim in life is to provide sufficient food to fill their bellies and clothes to cover their nakedness. Another example of the broad-faced, flat-nosed type is exhibited by the bust of a woman found by Franz Blum in 1925 near the ruins of Palenque and now in the Tulank University Museum. It will be seen that this broad-faced type is encountered from one end of the Mayan area to the other, from Palenque in the north through Ixcun and Menche to Copan in the extreme south, and indeed it must have been universal throughout the whole area, for without the slave class it would have been impossible for the Maya to have carried out the gigantic architectural works, the ruins of which now cover the country. It is important to note Dr. Gann's assertion that the slave class greatly outnumbered the even-featured master class. I have held the opinion for years that the builders of the ancient civilization of Central America were whites, few in number when compared to the colored slave class. Perhaps a few hundred thousand at the most, while much of tropical America must have already been occupied by the Negro. Maybe the Negro, or near Negro, had in very ancient times been blown by storms in his dugout from the more easterly of the South Sea Islands across to the mainland of South America, for that larger population of this hemisphere was entirely populated when Europeans first touched its shores. And it was from the general neighborhood of the equatorial Amazon Valley where we might naturally expect to find the refuge area of the most backward type, if it had reached the country at all, that we find the Carib emerging. This savage clan spread terror through the West Indies and along the eastern Central American coast, attacking the coast settlements of the Mayas and the later mongrel descendants of the latter. These Caribs practiced cannibalism, a custom found only among the most savage Negroids. With the heavy preponderance of the Negro type, both north and south of Panama, we might expect that in the course of 2,000 or 3,000 years, to find the absolute, ultimate purity of the Negro type to be only slightly diluted by the small proportionate amount of white blood, after the latter had once been lost in the sea of black man's blood. There must have been areas 3, even 2,000 years ago where there were still nearly pure Negroes, but the constant warfare that was carried on between the tribes everywhere in both North and South America and the practice of carrying home captives, especially the females, was a potent factor in spreading the small portion of white blood to the most distant tribes, some receiving more than others. This resulted in approximate evening up of the Indian type from Patagonia to Alaska. But mind you, I say approximate evening up advisedly, for there is a distinct variation of color in many sections. In South America, there are lighter colors and very dark, almost black, colors of skin, while from Central America north, we find all the shades of color from almost black skin to the fairer Toltec and the still lighter skinned Mandan and Menominee. The Kansas Indians, some California tribes, the Apaches, and the latter's northern Athabascan cousins were or are nearly black. Almost without variation, the Negroid features of thick lips and platterine noses are more observable among the blacker type than among the lighter. But there are no widely distributed types, and few individuals of the Amerindian anywhere that are entirely devoid of Negroid indications in the nose and lips. The proto-Negro signs are very apparent among the Iroquois nations and most of the Algonquin tribes. It is unfortunate that the modern science of ethnology so young, even today, was not already established in the days of Montezuma II and Cortes. If some of the old Spaniards had been less avaricious for gold, or if the priests had been more scholarly and less of the religious fanatic, invaluable studies in the ethnic differences among the aboriginal inhabitants of Mexico could have been recorded. But all we know is that the Toltecs were a lighter-skinned people, indicating that others about them were dark-skinned. It is quite plausible, on consideration of the scanty information we have, to believe that the Toltecs and other stocks still existing 500 years ago in Mexico and Central America were but a few hundred years removed from the last individuals of white skins. The Toltecs had held on to the vestiges of the ancient civilization and imparted their culture to the Aztecs, with whom, no doubt, they freely intermarried. Very much of the science and culture of the old Mayan race of city and temple builders had been forgotten, but about as much had been conserved as could be expected of descendants degenerated into half-Negroes. As the Spanish conquerors came in and laid the sword to the people and broke their spirit with slavery, their tribal lines and pride quickly faded away and paved the way for more general levelling of their racial colour, except where the newer mongrel, the Spanish-Indian mixture, began to show up. As a consequence, we have little opportunity today to find true examples of the real Aborigines as they existed at the time of the conquest, and those are in Yucatan and Quintana Roo, as noted and described by Dr. Gann, showing significant variations. Mr. Gregory Mason, chronicler of the recent New York Times Spinden-Mason expedition into the Maya country, adds up-to-date testimony of value to our theme here. Part of his last chapter is very interesting in this respect. He begins the chapter with a poem about the lost Mayan glory, the last two quatrains of which say, "On ruined palace and crumbling wall, the fat and sleepy iguanas crawl. No temple bell for sacrifice rings, but only the lonely moan bird wings. Under the jungle of Yucatan lies the mystery of Mayapan. Did those who worshipped the sun and rain choose rather death than the cross of Spain?" Then the explorer continues discussing the mystery. "This question has stirred historians and philosophers since the first report that there were great white cities in the jungles of Central America filtered out to the scientific world. What was the fate of that high, early American civilization? There is no longer much reason to doubt that the present so-called Mayan Indians are of the same race as the people the Spaniards found occupying the cities conspicuous for their tall towers and very large houses well built of stone and plaster. Therefore, if those natives who were occupying some of the limestone cities in 1517 were of the same race as the builders, we may say with assurance that the Indians of present Yucatan are descended from the great architects. Why has there ever been any reason to doubt this, you may ask, with rather natural impatience? The doubt arose, and the doubt has continued to live in many minds, first because of the great discrepancy between the high culture, evidenced by the ruins, and the low intelligence of contemporary natives, and second, because from 1517 to the present time, the Indians of Yucatan have appeared to possess no traditions of a high past, no ability to explain the origin of vestiges of high attainment in art and science which lie about their country on every hand. For instance, an account of the ruined city of Uxmal, given in 1586 by a companion of Alonso Ponce, a Franciscan delegate, says, "The Indians do not know, surely, who built these buildings, nor when they were built, though some of them did their best in trying to explain the matter, but in doing so showed foolish fancies and dreams, and nothing fitted into the facts or was satisfactory. In short, there was much material at hand for the construction of the theory that the Indians met by Cordoba and Grijalva were members of collateral tribes which had occupied the stone cities after the builders had disappeared. But gradually, this tenet has lost weight, and an alternative has gained increasing credibility. This is the postulate that the Yucatan Indians of the early 16th century were direct descendants of the city builders, but degenerate descendants. In short, that the culture of the Mayas had already received its death blow, and that only the dregs still lived when the Spaniards came. The acceptance of this alternate theory is made easier by a constantly increasing body of proof that even if the modern Indians have no articulate traditions of the men who built the temples, they have an inherited reverence for these shrines, and they still use forms of ritual identical with or very similar to ceremonies of the first Indians. Of course, examples of ritualistic survivals may be attributable to instinctive imitation, which need not imply any understanding of the ancient theology or any knowledge of the men who founded it, but the existence of such old rites today does strongly suggest that the Indians of the modern bush are of the stock of the old astronomers. In spite of the mixture of Catholic ritual, these Indians have not really accepted Christianity. On the contrary, many of them hate its very name. In the heart of the thick bush of Quintana Roo Spindens and I found it magnificent Spanish cathedrals tenanted only by bats and buzzards, while within a few miles Copal was burning in Mayan temples, albeit the hands that brought the offerings had lost the skill that built these structures centuries ago. Mr. Mason finishes his book with speculations as to the mysterious cause of complete degeneracy of the Mayans and their once flourishing culture. He produces a hypothesis that is ingenious and seemingly reasonable until the new ethnic theory advanced here is considered. With this new view, I think every shred of mystery in the matter is broken away. For an uncertain length of time, before the coming of Europeans, perhaps many hundreds of years, every vestige of the old pure whites who were responsible for that culture in its flower had dissolved into the mongrel mixture of his and his slaves' blood. The crude remains of that culture, found by the Spaniards, were no more than the sickly remnants of what once was great. Mr. Mason thinks that a 20-year plague and the Toltec conqueror's heel, as well as internecine warfare, were the elements of debasement which toppled the once great Maya race to the depths of degeneracy. If that were all required to ruin a great race, England today should, by all logic, be a jungle of insect-eating cannibalistic savages, for that virile, doggedly persistent race of old Britain has suffered the terrible years of the Black Plague and every other sort of plague, as well as fierce internecine warfare, invasion, and temporary subjugation. By the same reasoning, the irrepressible Gallic sons of France should have given up the ghost after 1871 and gone rapidly to the dogs. But did they? They were of too noble a strain of the white race to be ready for such easy effacement.
You're listening to Radio Aryan at Radio Aryan.com.